This is Power Lunch, exclusively on Lightning Power Play via the iHeartRadio app.
It's going to be an intense series, that's for sure. Guys step up for each other all night, and you know that's what you want as a team. You know, I think we were in there together, and that's what you need as a team. And you know, it's a tight group in there, and you know, we'll keep doing that for each other.
That's right. Keep doing it for each other. You know what we're going to do for you today here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play? We've got the schedule, baby. That's right. We can start to give you an idea of when you can call off work because you're cheering off the Tampa Bay Lightning. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say that out loud, Dave? No. Come on. You know how.
I don't think people need to call off work unless they work at night or they work on Saturday afternoon.
Well, I'm talking about for the next day to recoup.
Oh, so I see. Okay.
Let's give the schedule here. Sunday, game one.
Well, is this like the NFL schedule? Do we just go win, 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 win?
Well, see, I even say like after a lot, like if you're a fan, so the playoffs in any sport are it's the best time of the year. There's no question. I do feel like in hockey, though, Dave, it is so emotionally draining. I don't know what it is about NHL playoffs. Maybe it's because how intense things are, especially right off the start where guys are just going 100 miles per hour and you're living and dying on every bounce of the puck. And you're doing that for a 7-game series, which is just emotionally draining. Then you have to do it for 4 series if you want to win the Stanley Cup. But I do feel like, especially after a loss, man, as a fan, you really go through the emotional roller coaster of a hockey play. And I'm just saying, if your team loses and you're not feeling it the next day, you know what? Just tell them that Lightning Radio gave you a written excuse to call off work. And if they have a problem, they can call the show, Dave, or tweet at us, and we'll walk them through it. I think it's the least we can do.
We are going to be good therapy for Lightning
so.
Fans after a win
so.
Or after a loss.
Good and bad. And let's hope they start on a high note, off on a high note here. Sunday, 7:30. That is going to be game one. And I know a lot of people were trying to figure out when that first game would be. What's interesting is the first 4 games, all different times. And Dave, as you said to me right before we went on the air, it is every other day. So you can kind of get in that routine of when the Lightning and Panthers are going to play. So it goes Tuesday, May 18th at 8 p.m. Thursday.
That's game two.
That is game two, yes. That is game two. Game three, Thursday, May 20th at 6:30. That'll be at Amalie, of course. And then Saturday, May 22nd, game four at 12:30. So that gives you an idea, at least the first 4 games set. And then games 5, 6, and 7 are Monday, Wednesday, and Friday to be determined. And that typically happens there. So that's the schedule, Dave. We can get an idea of what to expect there, and a couple of interesting time situations, as you and I had discussed a little bit before, just with the other teams and how they were going to stack these times one by one. 7:30 is a somewhat normal time, but then you have 8, 6:30, and 12:30. So that's what we're looking at there.
Yeah, I like the series that are every other day all the way through. There's no back-to-back situation, which is rare, but we did see it in the bubble last year, and occasionally you see it during a normal playoff year. That is usually something to do with building availability and other scheduling that's happening.
The North series are going to have a back-to-back in the first round.
And that's not surprising because they are starting later. That was something we addressed with Darren Dreger on the show yesterday. And there's also not like a 2-day gap between games. In other words, like game and then not 1 day off, but 2 days off and then another game. And so, look, the players are going to get into a rhythm. I think John Cooper had mentioned the travel is not onerous in this series. Certainly not. I mean, it's a 40-minute plane ride. I mean, the way they're doing the divisions this year, most of these series are not going to have really tough travel. I mean, you could have had like Vancouver and Toronto, theoretically, or Vancouver and Montreal. You're not. You could have had Edmonton and Montreal, which would be a little farther, but you don't. You got Toronto and Montreal and Edmonton and Winnipeg, and those are manageable. Carolina and Nashville, I mean, that's not terribly tough travel. In the West – I mean, whether it's Vegas or Colorado, they're going to be playing St. Louis and Minnesota. That's maybe a little bit longer, but it's not like they're traveling across the country like you would normally see, say, in a Stanley Cup final. And the Lightning have a schedule in terms of the travel that's comparable to what the teams in the East normally see, like when the Rangers and the Devils play. Yeah. Basically, it's a really short trip. So I don't think that anything off the ice is going to affect the stamina for both these teams.
No, it's a good
the
point.
Schedule is in a very consistent rhythm, and the travel is going to be fairly easy.
This may be a poll question we ask tomorrow or later today, so look for that either on my Twitter feed or on at Bolts Radio before we get to the line combinations today and the defense pairings, because I think that's the probably biggest news coming out of what we saw today at practice in addition to the first four games and the timing of those in the days. And that would be, if you're a Lightning fan, understanding that the Panthers, I think, are going to have 50% capacity in their home barn. Are you considering making the trip down there to watch either game one or game two of this first round matchup? I would be very intrigued by that. I've got to be honest. I hadn't really thought about it too much. And then I'm thinking, you know, Dave, we talked about this yesterday a little bit when we were, you know, saying, like, would Toronto have their fans maybe go to Buffalo? And because they haven't seen hockey, they haven't been in a building all year. But let's localize.
And that would be classified as a home game for Toronto.
It would be.
We reach that point.
And I'm wondering if Lightning fans would make the trip and try and see as much hockey as possible, because let's face it, not everybody's been able to see the Lightning the way they wanted to the last year or so. And, you know, we understand the attendance is going to be higher in games 3 and 4 to start the playoffs for Tampa Bay at Amalie Arena. But I'm curious, if you are a huge Lightning fan, which you are because you're listening to the show, are you thinking about going down to Sunrise and watching these two teams play in Game 1 and Game 2? Let us know at Bolts Radio. Brian Burns, who's going to be our guest coming up in about 20 minutes, tweeted out earlier today, Dave, the lines and D pairings from practice. And let's just face it, if you're a Lightning fan, this is all really good news. The first line had Palat, Points, and Kucherov. The second line had Killorn, Cirelli, Stamkos. The third line had Colton, Gord, and Coleman. And again, I'm moving left to right. And then the fourth line was Maroon, Johnson, and Joseph. The D pairings were interesting, maybe a little more interesting than the forwards. Hedman and Ruta together. McDonough and Chernak together. Sergachev and Savard together, and then your fourth D pairing was Shen and Foots. A couple of things that stick out, Dave, for me, and then let's get your thoughts for sure. Goodrow, of course, not at practice, so we talk about his injury out indefinitely. Who knows what that means? But Colton moves up to the third line. Johnson centers the fourth line, at least at practice today. And then John Cooper and his staff electing to go back to Hedman and Ruta, have Chernak and McDonough together, but then putting Savard with Sergachev. What do you make of the combinations there? In many ways, I kind of like it. You know, even though Goodrow was out, you knew Colton wasn't going to come out of the lineup, but essentially getting bumped up and Johnson going to be a centerman, which is his strongest position, but albeit on the fourth line where you're probably playing limited minutes. What do you make of the forward combinations there?
When the series gets underway, particularly with the first two games being in Sunrise, the Lightning are the road team, coming out of those games, you and I are going to make note of how often the Lightning are able to massage the matchups, which is harder to do when you're the road team. And we are going to see if the Lightning make a concerted effort to get Yanni Gord's line with Coleman, and now it looks like it is Ross Colton, out against Barkov's line. And if they try and get McDonough and Chernak, maybe just as importantly, out against Barkov's line. Now, we talked about on the show yesterday, it's not just Barkov's line. I think that is the most important line for the Panthers, but their second line with Bennett and Huberdeau and the way they ran it yesterday, Tippett was the right winger. And the third line with Wennberg, Vetrano, and Hornqvist, that is also a challenging line to face. So it's going to take a collective effort from the Lightning defensively. And again, at the risk of repeating myself, when I say defensively, that is not only how you play without the puck, it is how you play with the puck. If you can force Barkov and company to play in their own zone and you have the puck for the majority of a given shift, then you're doing good work defensively by not letting them have the puck. But good team defense is also what you do without the puck. How are you handling coverage both off the rush and in the defensive zone? But the Lightning probably have an idea of how they want to work these matchups. And it may be that they can't get the matchups that they want as the road team. But if they can, the choice to make Ross Colton the third winger in a potential matchup situation against Barkov's line, which would be Barkov or Hagee and Duclair, is interesting. So why would they put Colton on that line? Well, I think what we've seen from Ross Colton, beyond the ability to kind of drive play, which he did playing most of the year with Joseph and Maroon, he can skate. He can skate for sure. He is smart. And he is a ferocious puck battle winner. I actually saw a quote from Jeff Halpern. Joe Smith had it in his article today. He was kind of spelling out the way he thought the lineup might look. And I don't know if Joe had a scoop because he nailed it based on how they ran the lines today. Or maybe John Cooper read Joe's article and said, you know what? I really like this. I tend to believe that it would, if it's anything, it's the former rather than the latter. I think Coop had an idea of how he wanted to construct this. And Colton played with Gord and Coleman in the final regular season game as well. But like, what you are sacrificing, if that's the right word, by putting Colton on that line, what you are sacrificing is really two areas. Number one, he has zero games of NHL playoff experience. So he is wet behind the ears in that regard, A. And B, just hasn't played with Gord and Coleman a lot outside of this one game that they had together, in which they look pretty good, but that was game 56 of the regular season. That is a whole different situation than game one of the playoffs. But what you're getting is a guy who works extremely hard, who is extremely tenacious winning puck battles, who can skate quite well, and who is a smart hockey player. And we'll see how it works. The McDonough-Chernak pairing and the reuniting of those two is an indication to me anyway that that is what John Cooper and company, the rest of the coaching staff, Rob Zettler works the D, Derek Lalonde, Jeff Halpern, like they have decided this is their shutdown pair, and as much as they can, they want that group out against Barkov's line. And if they can't get out against Barkov's line, then the other pairings, Hedman, Ruda, Sergachev, and Savard, are going to have to do what they can against Barkov's line and be as successful as they can. And maybe you just play McDonough and Chernak against Bennett's line, if that's the way it's going to be. Or you have to have them play against Wennberg's line. Their fourth line is kind of a sandpaper line. The way they constructed it at practice yesterday, the Panthers, was Achari with Mason Marchment and Ryan Lomberg. So those are three kind of gritty players, sandpaper-type players. But I think the Lightning want a proven pair that has had a lot of success together, both the time they've been together and in the playoffs, Chernak and McDonough, to try and contain Barkov's line. And I think what I'm curious about in game one, and we'll talk about it on Monday after game one, is how effective were McDonough and Chernak against Barkov's line and Yanni Gord's line against Barkov's line, and how often were the Lightning able to get that matchup? And even if they get the matchup, there's no guarantee that they can have success against Barkov or Hagee and Duclair. That's the game plan, but that's why they play the games. That's why every game is its own entity, and sometimes one team pulls on the rope a little bit harder, and they're able to impose their will more on the opposition than the other way around. But that's, I think, what the Lightning want in a matchup against Barkov, Verhaeghe, and Duclair.
You know, it's going to be interesting, too, I think, for that line initially. How often can they keep the puck in Florida's own zone? Because that, that line does have the ability, Dave, to grind it out and wear down the other team. Because as I've said on this show, and as you know, you have two 20-goal scorers on that third line. Not obviously this year, but Gord and Coleman have a history of filling the net a bit. And look, their first priority is going to be being responsible defensively, particularly if they're going against Barkov. But one of the things we've discussed on this show a number of times, I believe strongly, is that I think the Lightning's best defense is when they are forechecking and playing in the other team's own zone.
Agreed.
It doesn't mean they can't defend in their own zone, and they're not nasty to play.
And you're going to have to defend in your own zone. Because I agree with you, but it's hard to do that every shift. You're not going to force Barkov to play in his own zone for the whole game.
No doubt. But at least I think that third line, they're not just a bunch of guys who take up space. They're going to force that line at some point. It might not be every game. It might not be every shift, as you said. But, you know, there's going to come a point in game one where maybe that Gord line pushes back and forces Barkov and, you know, Duclair and Verhaeghe to defend. And star players, not all of them, but a good majority of them, I mean, they don't like defending if they don't have to. So, I mean, I think that's going to be really interesting to see, because one of the other things that Pat Maroon had said, one of the reasons he likes playing with Colton on the fourth line is his ability to play along the wall and to grind it a little bit. And I think those three guys, there's the opportunity for them to do that with some success against the Barkov line. I also think it is interesting going back to what's worked before. Jan Rutsa and Victor Hedman.
Yeah. Chernak along and McDonough. With McDonough and Chernak. Yes.
Yeah, along. I mean, I think what that tells me is that when they got Savard especially, they wanted to do some tinkering. And Brian Engblom had talked about this on the last call. He wasn't going to be surprised if you saw Savard play with everybody. And really, John Cooper maybe mix and match the defense pairings. I think some of that makes a lot of sense. You want to see who has some familiarity with one another in case injuries do occur. But what that tells me is that John Cooper is going back to what's worked in the past. And I think there's some security and comfort in knowing that. And let's face it, I don't know how well he's going to play, Dave, in the playoffs, because I feel like his time with the Lightning has been thrown for a loop at times during the playoffs because he's been injured heading into the playoffs, and that would be Jan Rutsa. But Victor Hedman has talked about the chemistry he's had with Jan Rutsa. Victor Hedman's play at times has faltered this year, I think in large part because of his comfort with Jan Rutsa. I know that may seem weird to a lot of people because Hedman's a Norris Trophy candidate. He's a tremendous player, and we understand his accolades there. But I think there's something to be said for going back to a player that works with him, and same with Chernak and McDonough. So I think John Cooper looked at this and said, all right, no messing around. Those guys are going to be on the ice a lot, and I want them to be at their best, understanding that Hedman's playing with an injury for sure, and the way you can get the most out of Hedy, maybe in this first round and throughout these playoffs, is to go back with something that was like a little bit of a security blanket for him. I don't know if that's going to work out, Dave, but that's the way I read it, and in many ways I applaud John Cooper for at least going back to that to start, and then, of course, you can always adjust.
And this is not like the NFL playoffs. So if something doesn't work in game one, your season is not over if you lose the first game. It's a best of seven. So this is a series, and teams can make adjustments along the way. They can make in-game adjustments, and they can make adjustments in between games. And this is something we touched on. The days are running together, Greg, but I think we touched on it. We touched on it before the final game for sure, when it was clear – when it was not yet clear that the Lightning would be the third seed. There is some pressure on the team that gets the first two games at home to hold serve. Now, if they can hold serve and they go up 2-0, then pressure definitely shifts to the other team for games three and four. But I think I brought this up in the context of Kucherov and Stamkos and speculating, like, what if it takes them a game to get in rhythm and things don't go well for the team generally in the first game? Wouldn't you rather have that game be a road game than a home game.
Sure.
Because you go into the first two and you say, we kind of want to split here at the very least. We'd love to win both. So it kind of gives the Lightning, I don't want to say there's runway there. I mean, there is, because like I said, if you lose game one, the series isn't over. You lose game one, though, and then there is some pressure to win game two, even if you are the road team. But I think that it just gives you a little bit more elbow room to work out some of these changes. And maybe gives you a game to get in rhythm for some of these changes. You know, you talk about Ruda and Hedman. It's been a while since they've played together, I feel. Hasn't it? I mean, I feel Chernak and Hedman play together a lot this year. For various reasons. And Ruda has had more injury issues this year. So based on that, he and Hedman haven't played together a lot. So I understand what you're saying about it, like a security blanket. But it still may take a little time for them to get in rhythm. It may take time for Gord, Coleman, and Colton to get in rhythm. It may take time for this reunited power play unit with Hedman, Kucherov, and Stamkos around the umbrella, Point in the middle and Killorn in the corner. Like, that's been a really successful unit for the Lightning going back several years, but they haven't been a unit for quite some time. So it may take a little time. Who knows how many power play chances the Lightning are going to get in game one. So look, I'd like to see the Lightning not miss a beat and come out and everyone's in sync and they play a great game one and they win game one.
Yeah.
But if that doesn't go to plan, and things are a little bit out of sync, and you don't get game one, I think I'd rather have that be a road game than a home game.
Yes.
As much as we've talked about, like, how important is playing at home versus on the road, you know, there still is a feel to the series about where the game is being played.
I would agree. And I think especially, too, it's going to take a lot, I think, for us to really feel like Tampa Bay is behind the eight ball in a series, Dave. You know, unless they go down 0-3. I mean, if they lose the first game, if they split down in Florida, even if they lose the first two, depending on how they do it, I'm not sure there's going to be a lot of panicking on our end. Certainly, we're going to point out the flaws if we see something like that happen. But I think until the Lightning prove that they're not mentally capable of dealing with unusual circumstances in a series, I'm not sure we're going to start to look at things and say, my goodness, I think this series is over. I think that's kind of the benefit of the doubt you get when you have the success they had last year and then some of the adversity that's set in this year, at least how I look at it. Now, I know some people may look at this and say, well, Greg, you know, look, I didn't like the way the Lightning finished the year and those two games against Florida, but I think we've all understood. And to the credit of the Florida Panthers, too, Dave, they're saying the right things. Joel Quenneville saying the right things, that those two games at the end of the year really don't matter. And now they have to look at this and say, look, they're getting a couple of really big guns coming back in Stamkos and Kucherov. And we've got to be prepared to deal with them as if those guys are going to come in and really play well, which I think Lightning fans are expecting, and maybe even the coaching staff as well. I do think it's interesting when you look at the line combinations, the fact that they did move Colton up to the third line and move Johnson to the fourth. If Goodrow, if and when he's ready to come back, does that signal that Goodrow would go back to the third line and then Colton, who just essentially got promoted to the third, would be the player that moves down to the fourth and Johnson ends up being the odd man out? I think you could look at it that way. I don't want to speculate too much, but I think it is an indication of how comfortable the coaching staff is with Ross Colton, Dave. And I think at least we have been pretty consistent, and it's played out this way, that Ross Colton, even with an injury, was not only going to be in the lineup, but he was going to have a pretty significant role, which speaks to how well he played in the regular season and how responsible he's been, not only offensively, but defensively as well.
Yeah. I mean, look, I have no problem with them putting him there because he has showed very, very well this year with the attributes that we spelled out at the start of the show. He's a smart player. He can skate. And probably at the top of the list, because being smart and being able to skate are two really important characteristics. Right. But he is extremely hard on pucks. And that is a critical aspect of having success in the playoffs. Winning puck battles and making it hard on the other team. Ross Colton is a hard player to play against. And I mean that as a compliment. And when you have a lot of Ross Coltons on your team, you become a hard team to play against. That's one of the things that Quenneville talked about with his Panthers team this year. One of the differences from last year's team, which he coached, but also previous iterations of the Panthers and this year's team, they become a harder team to play against. And I think Ross Colton is a hard player to play against, which is why his game is tailor-made for the playoffs, similar to Barkley Goodrow. Barkley Goodrow is a hard player to play against. The Lightning recognized that at the deadline last year.
Yep.
It was a big reason why they got him.
Yep.
And they saw how hard he is to play against in a good way, helping the Lightning in the bubble last year.
No doubt. At Bolts Radio, if you want to get involved in the conversation, you can. Bob says, with all the players practicing and assume ready to play, we are back to ask who sits, what are the lines, defensive pairings, love this time of the year. Congrats on getting into Amalie Arena during games. Great news. That's right. We did talk about that yesterday, Dave, about the feature that you are going to be able to listen starting game three at Amalie Arena, because that's how it's going to play out.
It would be like the old days, when the old days meant that people brought radios to games.
When do you think people stopped doing that? Or do you think people, because the reception was so bad?
Yeah, that's a question for Steve. Now, didn't we have an internal feed on a radio station that you could access, but it wasn't like 970?
It was a different
station.
It was
a special channel that fed 970, Steve.
Steve's
juggling a few balls.
Sorry, I was trying to listen to Ryan McDonough here. So we used to have 1260 AM. There was this little small transmitter in the building.
There we go.
That you could listen on. You can get at certain parts of the building 105.9 FM, which is WFLA's translator as well. You can get in some parts of the building. But now you'll be able to use your phone to do this throughout the building just by logging on to the free Wi-Fi at Amalie Arena and then going to the Lightning app and listening. So bring your Bluetooth headphones. Yeah.
So why is it just that the signals were not able to penetrate like these newer buildings as opposed to when I was a kid growing up? Like you could bring a radio. I grew up in Boston. Like you could bring a radio to the Boston Garden and listen to the Bruins or the Celtics.
Yeah, there's several things. One, the newer buildings are a little harder for AM signals to penetrate. The amount of interference in the atmosphere now for radio signals with cell towers and all the new digital technologies that in buildings and in just in the atmosphere itself makes radio signals a little harder. They don't quite go as far. There's more interference, particularly for AM. So that causes that. The 105.9 FM for WFLA is a translator. It's only a 250 watt tower. It's not a full service FM signal. So it doesn't penetrate buildings well. You can get it in part of the buildings, but as more and more technology comes out from cell towers to everything else that's wireless, think of how many things are wireless now, from Bluetooth to Wi-Fi to all this stuff causes interference in the air and can affect radio signals too. So it is harder. Outdoor venues, it's a lot easier to get AM signals and FM for that matter. But a lot of it's just over time and technology changing.
But now we're doing an end around.
Yeah, essentially,
we're doing more of a direct.
Using your phones, which most people have and carry in their pocket. Now you can use that instead of bringing a separate radio and that stuff to the game, and trying to find AM radios now are pretty hard to do anyway. So
yeah,
we're gonna make it, Dave. When you have a couple of guys who are in the bathroom during intermission breaks and they're sitting there talking to each other and say, "Hey, did you just hear what Mish said and Espo just said about that first period?" And they're gonna be listening. And it's going to be great. And that's going to be a feature we have starting in game three. So
thanks for that visual image, by the way.
Yeah, did that ruin your day today? I mean, what are we going to do? Hey, Dave, it's playoff hockey. We got to take everything into consideration. But if you want to weigh in, you can on anything at Bolts Radio. The schedule is out. Game one on Sunday. That'll be 7:30. And we are asking, too, What advantages do you think Tampa Bay has, or maybe what is their biggest advantage in this series? And for the Panthers, what is their biggest advantage? And Dave, I think it's easy to sit here and say Tampa Bay's experience and maybe talent level is their biggest advantage, but I'm wondering if there's anything else when you looked at these two teams when they played this year, if there was one thing that stood out where you said, yeah, I kind of feel like Florida is going to have some problems in a long series against the Lightning, and maybe even vice versa. And it could be as simple as containing the Barkov line, you know, in a 7-game series for Florida.
Well, let me take Florida first. I think the Barkov line is a challenge for the Lightning or for any potential opponent the Panthers might have. But I think the two changes the Panthers, three changes, I'm going to throw out three changes for the Panthers that have made their team more difficult to face this year than in years past. First of all, their pace of play is faster. So it's not just skating fast, although they have guys who can skate fast. Think of Duclair and Vetrano. Vetrano can fly.
Yeah,
we've seen that in some of the games this year. But how quickly they're moving the puck. Like, they are playing the game at a faster pace than they used to. So that's one. Two, I think that Joel Quenneville, in addition to the pace of play acceleration, he has implemented more solid structured play so that they are defending better in front of their goaltender when the other team has the puck. And then the third part is, while, and I feel like a broken record here because I've been talking a lot about this, I feel like, over the last few days as the Lightning and Panthers have played a lot, like, Barkov's line to me is still the line. That is the line that drives the bus for the Panthers. But they do have more forward depth now than they used to. And within that forward depth, they are harder to play against. So they are harder to play against both in terms of their compete, but they're also harder to play against in that, you know, Alex Wennberg is their third line center. And he's a really good player. Frank Vetrano is their third line left winger. He is a really, really good player. If Hornquist is the right winger on that third line, I mean, he has championship pedigree from his time with the Penguins. So, like, that's tough. That's a tough matchup. When you got a team that plays fast, plays hard, plays structured, and is fairly deep, right? I mean, I think that is why the Panthers have reached the heights that they have reached so far this year. Now, for the Lightning, they can throw much of the same back at the Panthers. They play at a fast pace. They have forward depth. They can be structured. They can be hard to play against. And so that's why I think a lot of people are looking at this series and saying, yeah, there's an evenness to this series. People are kind of saying, well, maybe the Panthers had the upper hand in the regular season series, but the Lightning have the playoff experience and they're getting the guys back from injury. And all of that is true. I usually kind of fall back on this, though, Greg. The team that executes better is usually the team that's going to give itself the best chance to win. Understanding there are some X factors here, like goaltending can erase one team's advantage. If one team is exceptionally better than the other on special teams, which is executing, but that's different than 5-on-5 play, that can tip the balance. A bounce can certainly tip the balance, and certainly the Panthers got some bounces, particularly in the game on Saturday that the teams played. But all of the things being equal, the team that executes its game plan better tends to have the upper hand and give itself a better chance to win. And I guess we're just going to have to wait and see which team does that. The last thing I'll say, because I kind of said that the teams are even in a lot of these different components, the Lightning's playoff experience can be an advantage. I don't know that it's going to be an advantage, but where it can be an advantage is the Lightning simply, up and down the roster, have more guys who have been through the things that you talked about experiencing as a fan at the beginning of the show. How are you reacting after a win? How are you reacting after a loss? How are you reacting within a game when momentum comes against you and you're facing a stiff headwind? How are you reacting when a call doesn't go your way? or you're frustrated with something that happened within a game when the stakes are so much higher. The Lightning have more of that sort of experience, and that may help them, but it may not. I mean, in that the Panthers may prove to be equally resilient at dealing with kind of the ups and downs that come with being in a playoff series. If the Panthers lose a game, how are they going to react in the next game? How are they going to react, particularly if they lose a game at home? Are they going to tighten their grip on their sticks? Maybe they won't, even though they haven't been through as many of those types of situations collectively as a group. Certain guys have. I mean, Hornquist has for sure. Achari had, you know, certainly a deep playoff run with the Bruins in 2019. So they have guys who have been through it, but collectively as a group, they have not tasted a lot of postseason success. And in order to have postseason success, usually it means that you are dealing with these sorts of ups and downs well. Not too high after a win, not too low after a loss. Very, very hard to do, because you just spelled out how fans feel following the NHL playoffs. So I guess we're going to find out at the end of the series if the experience factor was a factor in favor of the Lightning. But there's no question that up and down their roster, the Lightning do have more postseason experience than the Panthers. But it didn't really help the New York Rangers as much as people thought it would when they faced the Lightning in the 2015 Eastern Conference Final.
Yep.
But I think it did help the Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup Final that year.
We've got Brian Burns. He's the beat reporter for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Up next, we'll get an update on practice. He's Dave Michigan. I am Greg Linelli. It's Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play.
The perfect social distancing distraction for your lunch hour. This is Power Lunch, only on Lightning Power Play on the iHeartRadio app.
All right, playoff hockey is upon us. Greg Linelli with you, along with Dave Michigan. Keep those questions coming in at Bolts Radio. We know game one now, 7:30, Sunday night. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to talk about it right now with our good friend, the beat reporter of the Tampa Bay Lightning. That would be Brian Burns. Burnsy, great to be with you. Playoff hockey upon us, and boy, at least according to your reporting and others, the Lightning basically back at full strength when it comes to the roster outside of Barkley Goodrow. What can you tell us?
The Lightning lineup, yeah, like you meant, they're all there. Everybody except Barkley Goodrow, who remains out indefinitely with that upper body injury. But they started about a half hour ago, and they started with some power play work. And, you know, that top unit was back to full strength, which we haven't seen since February 25th, 2020, over 14 months ago, since we saw Nikita Kucherov in the right circle, Steven Stamkos in the left circle. Victor Hedman was out there, you know, wearing a regular jersey, quarterbacking the unit, Braden Point in the middle, and Alex Killorn down low. And then we got a little glimpse of the lines and the defensive pairings as well. And it looks like for now, with Goodrow out, they're going to put Ross Colton on that third line, kind of what you had alluded to, Mish, during the regular season finale, when that was kind of like a little bit of a trial period, it seemed like, to see how he could do in that role. Then we saw Tyler Johnson on the fourth line, centering that unit with Pat Maroon and Matthew Joseph. And also one other thing to note, they did the defensive pairings, and it looks like, at least to start, they've got Hedman and Ruda together. They were going back to McDonough and Chernak for that second pair, that shutdown pair that they've used throughout the years. And Savard was with Mikhail Sergachev.
What do you make of Colton moving on to the Gord-Coleman line, Burnsy? And do you think that, best he can, John Cooper will try and get that line out against the Alexander Barkov line for Florida?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, we were talking about it a little bit before the game on Monday. It seems like a natural fit, right? Like, he plays that same style of game that a Yanni Gord and a Blake Coleman play, kind of that relentlessness, that puck hound type of mentality. Just a guy that's going to give you a ton of energy, isn't going to quit on the shift, is going to go after every, you know, single puck, is going to try to outfight everybody for every puck battle. It just seems like his makeup would fit really well with those other two guys. And certainly the loss of Barkley Goodrow is going to be pretty significant for this team. Not only what he brings to that line, and also what he does on the penalty kill, working together with Blake Coleman. That's something that this coaching staff is going to have to figure out. Who do they want to pair with Coleman? You know, the forward spot on the penalty kill, because those two, since they've come over at last year's trade deadline, have really just had a great chemistry together and really performed well on that penalty kill, especially, and also on that third line. So remains to be seen what they're going to do there. But as far as the third line, it looks like Ross Coleman's going to get – or Colton's going to get that shot. And I think it's a good move. I think it's – and now what will be interesting is when Goodrow does come back, does that mean Colton comes down to the fourth line and centers that line again, and Johnson comes out? Does Johnson stay as that fourth line center and Ross Coleman comes out of the lineup? I think that'll be something to kind of watch for. Hopefully Goodrow's able to get back here, you know, at some point pretty soon, and the coaching staff will have to make that decision.
We talked about this in segment one, but for those who are just joining us right now, we told you 7:30 is game one Sunday, and then it's going to be Tuesday at 8 o'clock, Thursday at 6:30, then Saturday the 22nd at 12:30, and then the rest of the games to be determined. Of course, we'll see how that all plays out. So that gives you an idea, all different times, which is pretty intriguing. You know what, Bernsey, this is just speculation on our part, but I find it to be somewhat fascinating, the discussion when we talk about Lightning fans traveling to Sunrise. We know they're going to try and have at least 50% capacity. Do you get the sense that that could be a scenario where you see a good portion of Lightning fans in that game on the road?
I think so. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I was talking with Ed Encina, the beat writer for the Tampa Bay Times, at practice, and Ed was down in Sunrise for those final two regular season games, and I asked him, you know, how many Lightning fans were there? Was there a significant Lightning presence? And he said, yeah, that there was quite a few Lightning fans down there for that two-game set. Also, were down for the earlier series that they played against Florida and Sunrise. And you know, looking up some of the ticket prices online, you know, tickets can be had for about $100, which isn't breaking the bank for a playoff game. And there are tickets available, so you know, it might be an opportunity for Lightning fans to be able to get a ticket if you're not a season ticket member, or you're not. You know, the Lightning are trying to allow all of their season ticket members an opportunity to buy a ticket for one of the home games at Amalie Arena. But if you're not able to get one of those tickets, you know, there's an opportunity to go down to Sunrise and possibly, you know, watch the game there. And I think a lot of Lightning fans who maybe are shut out at Amalie Arena because of the 37% of capacity that's only going to be allowed into the arena, it's an opportunity for them to go down and watch the Lightning. And provide that vocal fan support, be that distant thunder that helped the team so much last year. So I do expect a decent amount of fans to travel down there and make their presence felt in Sunrise.
Brian, going back to the lines and the defense pairings, because you ran through them at the start of our chat, you did mention how Chernak and McDonough are back together as a pair, and Savard is going to be playing with Sergachev, or at least they were paired together at practice today. They spent a little bit of time playing together in the time that Savard has been with the Lightning, but the bulk of the time that Savard has been with the Lightning, he has been playing with McDonough. Is surprise the right word? I guess, are you surprised that they switched up the D pairings based on what we had seen through much of the regular season after Savard had arrived?
Yeah, a little bit. I was surprised to see Ruta with Hedman, because, you know, we had seen Hedman with Chernak for, you know, the final few games of the regular season until Hedman went down with that lower body injury for the last two. So it seemed like they had kind of honed in on what they wanted to do there with the defensive pairings, and liked what they saw with Hedman and Chernak, and liked what they saw with McDonough and Savard. And then we saw, you know, some Sergachev with Ruta when Ruta was able to come back. So a little bit surprised there that they kind of mixed them up. And I thought maybe we would have seen more Savard with Sergachev during the regular season, just to give Savard kind of an opportunity to play with all three of those left side guys, and just see, you know, maybe which one he developed the most chemistry with, or, you know, just kind of how you can do different permutations of how you want these the defensive pairings to go. So yeah, a little surprised to see that. Well, remains to be seen if that sticks, if that's what they're going to go into the game one of this first round series against Florida with, or maybe it was just something that they wanted to look at in practice today. And certainly it could be something where they start the series like that and then they change it back to what we saw during the end of the regular season. But yeah, a little bit surprising that, you know, Savard's with Sergachev right now, considering we didn't really see them that much at all during the regular season.
Brian Burns, the beat reporter for the Tampa Bay Lightning, joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play, getting you set for Game 1 between Tampa Bay and Florida. That's going to be Sunday, game time at 7:30. The schedule has been released, so make sure you check that out. We've already talked about it. Burnsy, Mish and I talked about Florida's numbers offensively against Vasi and whether you can draw any type of conclusion when it comes to those numbers. The Panthers quietly may sit there and look at it and say they put up 20 goals in six games against Vasi. What does that mean? Do you feel like that is something to keep an eye on, or are regular season stats just that? They don't really mean anything once the playoffs begin.
Yeah, I kind of lean more towards the latter. I don't know that those regular season stats are going to mean too much, especially when you look at those kind of last two games where the Lightning had a lot of their heavy hitters out of the lineup for those final two games in Sunrise. And certainly, I'm sure that led to a lot more of the good scoring chances that came against Andrei Vasilevsky. I mean, there's some concern that maybe Florida has a little bit of a book on Vasi, or at least has an understanding of how maybe they're able to beat him better than other teams have been able to in the past. But I think a lot of those numbers are skewed, and in particular by those last two games where I don't think you were really getting, you know, the full representation of the Tampa Bay Lightning and what you're going to see from them in a playoff situation from those last two games. I think back to a couple seasons ago when the Lightning steamrolled Columbus in the regular season. I think and then we all know what happened in that first round two seasons ago in the first round of the playoffs when Columbus swept the Lightning. So a lot of times you look at those things in the regular season, you think, oh, well, this is looking good going into the playoffs, and then just whatever happens in the playoffs has nothing to do with what happened in the regular season. It just seems like regular season has no bearing on what happens when you get into the playoffs, which is a completely different animal. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that if you're a Lightning fan wondering if Vasi's going to struggle against Florida because of maybe some higher numbers against them this regular season.
Well, my issue with throwing the stat out that Greg and I discussed on the show, was it yesterday? The day before. All the days are running together.
We'll call it yesterday.
It may have been the day before, but the stat line about Florida having scored four goals or more against Vasilevsky in four of the games between the teams this year, and Vasi had only allowed four or more in nine games total. So Florida had done it in almost half of the games that Vasilevsky had leaky performances, essentially, four or more, was that the stat line did not include the other two starts that Vasilevsky had against Florida. One game in which he allowed one goal, 6-1, the Lightning won, and the other game was a game that he absolutely stole, 3-2, the Lightning won in overtime. That was the first game of that six-game homestand, Brian, and Vasilevsky made 36 saves. So that was the issue I had, that, like, look, if you're going to do a sample size, include all the games, right, where Vasilevsky had two really good games as well. But where I'm going with this is, do you think the fact that Florida's had some success against Vasilevsky, I don't know if it means anything to Vasilevsky, but does it mean something to the Panthers, not only the fact that they're able to score some goals against Vasilevsky, but have some success against the Lightning in the regular season series? Not that that's going to carry over to a playoff series, to your point, but from a confidence standpoint, that they feel confident that they can have success against this opponent. Can that be taken out of what happened in the regular season series, both against the Lightning as a team and against Vasilevsky in some of those games?
Yeah, I'm sure they do probably have some confidence right now and are feeling pretty good about themselves, especially those final two games of the regular season where, you know, they controlled both of those games and dominated the Lightning. And I'm sure, you know, the Lightning will point to, well, we didn't have a lot of our starters in the lineup, but you know, neither did Florida. They had some starters that were missing too, and they're going to be getting these guys back once the postseason begins. I think if you're a Lightning fan, you hope that maybe Florida gets a little overconfident because of those results and feeling like maybe that they've solved the Tampa Bay Lightning and they have a plan for how they want to attack them. So I think the Lightning feel pretty good about themselves going into this series. I don't think they're putting too much weight on those last two final regular season games. I think they have the confidence of a defending Stanley Cup champion, and then they feel like they have the experience that they know how to win playoff series now. They know how to win these tight, you know, low scoring, tight checking type of game that you're going to see quite often in the playoffs. And quite frankly, Florida hasn't really seen that because they haven't been in the postseason that often or had an extended run where they've been faced with a lot of those situations. So I think that's where the Lightning are going to draw their confidence. I'm sure Florida's going to draw their confidence from the way that, you know, they were able to play the Tampa Bay Lightning this year. The Panthers are the only team that the Lightning finished with a sub 500 point percentage against. Every other team in the Central Division, they had a better than 500 point percentage. So certainly they struggled a bit with the Panthers in the regular season. And I think if you're the Lightning, you kind of hope that maybe Florida's a little overconfident based on those regular season performances.
He's the beat reporter of the Tampa Bay Lightning. Brian Burns joins us here on Power Lunch on Lightning Power Play. Burnsy, when you try and look at this series objectively, where does Tampa Bay have a real strong advantage? And conversely, where do the Panthers have a pretty decent advantage?
Well, I think, you know, we just talked about it in goal. I think, you know, even though the Panthers have better depth, they have three different guys to choose from, and that might be a disadvantage for them too. We've seen in the past where teams have had two guys that and no one really stands out or really takes ownership of the net, and then that becomes a story throughout the playoffs. I remember back to 2016 when the Lightning were facing the Pittsburgh Penguins, and every day it was, is it going to be Fleury or is it going to be Murray? And you know, Pittsburgh was able to get by the Lightning and win that and go on and win the Stanley Cup. But that was an issue, you know, who's going to be the starter in that. And I think that kind of, you know, I don't know if that took away from what Pittsburgh was able to do or was a distraction for them, but it was certainly a storyline throughout the throughout that postseason. So I wonder if the same thing might happen with Florida here where, you know, if I would assume Bobrovsky's probably going to get the first shot. If he struggles and they go with another guy and that guy plays well, is there going to be a bit of a goalie controversy? Are they going to be trying to figure out who their best guy to put in net is? That could be a storyline throughout this series. But I think for the Lightning, they have their guy. They know who their number one guy is. They're going to lean on Andrei Vasilevsky throughout. It's really going to be, you know, up to him whether or not the Lightning are going to be able to advance because they're going to put it all on his shoulders. So I think at that top spot, I think the Lightning certainly have an advantage in that Andrei Vasilevsky is better than, you know, pretty much any other goalie in the NHL. So any series they go into, they're going to have that advantage at the top of the goalie depth chart. Another area, I think the Lightning are better defensively. I think if you go, you know, 1 through 6 through their D core, they feel a little bit better about how they are at the top of their D core and then just how that depth goes all the way through throughout their lineup. So I think defensively the Lightning have a bit of advantage. As far as the Panthers, I think they've got a really dangerous power play, and we haven't really seen what the Lightning's most dangerous power play is going to look like because we haven't seen all those guys together since over 14 months ago, like I mentioned at the start here. So you wonder if the Lightning are going to be able to connect on the power play early when they're working these guys back into the lineup. You hope that they would be able to just plug those guys in and they'll be right back to that dangerous power play that we know that they have when, you know, all of those components are at their disposal. But Florida, you know, they've had a really good power play all season long. And I think that's an area where maybe they could take advantage of the Lightning, especially with Barclay Goodrow out. The penalty kill had been really good for the Lightning going down the stretch. And you just wonder how much is that going to be affected with Goodrow not in the lineup now? You hope not too much that they can plug somebody else in there, the Lightning can, and continue that success that they finished off the regular season. But for me, that's a question mark going into this series.
Who do you think takes Goodrow's spot on that? I mean, it may not be the first group over the boards with Blake Coleman, but I have to believe that Coleman will be one of the first penalty killers. So who do you think is going to play with Coleman on PK? We've seen, like, Gord and Joseph have been a duo. Killorn and Cirelli have been a duo. What does your gut tell you at this point?
Yeah, I don't know that it's necessarily that they bring somebody else in, like another forward, to play with Coleman or to play with one of those other guys. I think maybe it's kind of where you see some guys rotating, where maybe it's a Coleman and a Killorn and a Coleman and a Cirelli, and you're maybe kind of double shifting guys, or not a, back-to-back shifts, but you're playing guys a little bit more frequently than you might if you had Goodrow in there and he could go with Coleman and you could have your, rotate your three normal forward pairs. I think maybe you just condense it down to the five, and you'll see some guys playing with different combinations there. That's how I think that they will probably do it. Maybe they do bring somebody else in that can try to kill penalties and just be a sixth guy that is similar to what we saw maybe with the D-Core down towards the stretch, where they were kind of had five guys there, and then they were just rotating like a sixth guy in when it was Luke Shen and just kind of spotting him in here and there. Maybe you'll see something like that on the penalty kill, where they lean on five guys at that forward spot pretty heavily and then maybe rotate a sixth guy in, spot him in here or there when some guys need a breather. But I think they'll really just kind of pack it in with those five guys, those five forwards, and really concentrate on those guys getting the job done.
Burns, you got to be excited. You're going to be on the road covering this series, right?
Yeah, it's going to be, I've been fortunate enough to be at the arena for the games when they're at Amalie Arena, and that's been a lot of fun this year. But it doesn't feel the same when you're not on the road and you're not, kind of in those playoff battles that, this is the most fun time of the year. The players are always talking about it, like how this is the fun hockey. This is the best time of the year. It's this way for people covering the team, too. There's just a different buzz, a different excitement that comes with playoff hockey. Some of my best memories with this franchise are from, road playoff games and series that we've been on throughout the years, and kind of stuff behind the scenes, getting to know your coworkers a little bit better. Like, it's just a fun time, and it'll be fun to go back down there and be on the road. First time I've been on the road, I think, since I was on that last road trip right before COVID hit last season. So for me, it's been over, 14 months since I've been on the road and covered a team from a visiting arena. So there's a lot of excitement built around that. It'll be interesting to see, what the crowd's like in Florida and Sunrise for these games, if there's going to be a significant amount of Lightning fans, what the atmosphere inside the arena is going to be like. It's just really looking forward to covering this and to being there and being able to document it.
Go ahead, Greg.
No, I was just going to, I think it'd be kind of fun talking to the locals down there to see how big of a deal it is for them that this is the first time we've seen these two teams playing in a playoff. So you just wonder if it's a big deal. We've talked about the teams, it's a big deal because how good they are, but I wonder in terms of an audience, the fan base, if it means as much to them as we think it does with the hockey teams playing.
Yeah, I wonder for Florida in particular, like, they have a really good team. I mean, this is a team that has a legitimate shot to win a Stanley Cup, and I wonder, is their fan base more excited about the opportunity to play the Lightning, to play this cross-state rivalry and, have a legitimate chance to beat the Lightning, to knock off the defending Stanley Cup champions? Or are they more excited that, this is potentially a Stanley Cup team. This team could be lifting the Stanley Cup at the end of this run. So, yeah, I think you're right. It would be kind of interesting to talk to some of their fans and just kind of gauge, like, where their excitement comes from. Is it from playing the Lightning, or is it from the fact that, they have a pretty good team, too, and feel like they could do some damage in the playoffs?
Last one from me, Burnsy. This is one of eight first-round series. All but, I guess, two of them are set because we still have to determine who finishes first in the West, Colorado or Vegas. And the first-place team will get St. Louis. The second-place team will get Minnesota. What other series have kind of piqued your interest heading into the playoffs at this point?
The Toronto-Montreal one is really interesting to me just because, the Canadian media fan bases, they've been all in on Toronto all season long. And it was funny at the beginning of the year when Montreal got off to such a hot start, and you listen and you hear the Montreal media, and it's just nothing but praise for their GM and for the team that they put out on the ice. And then it's just funny to kind of see how that's been reeled back in since they've been struggling and just kind of, eat their way into the playoffs in what was, I think, a lot of people consider the weakest division of the four this year. So I'll be interested just to see how that goes. Like, I want to see, you know, those are two historic franchises, two big media markets, especially as far as hockey's concerned. So I think just from a periphery, watching how the media from both of those cities, how they react in this series, how the fan bases react. I don't know that necessarily the hockey is going to be the greatest, but I think more from looking at it from an outsider's perspective of, you know, how the fan bases and the media are going to treat that series and how they're just going to live and die on every single shift. I think that's going to be interesting for me to watch throughout the first round.
Well, Bernsie, we're glad you're along for the ride here. I'm sure we'll be speaking to you throughout the playoffs. Let's hope it's a long playoff run. And if you need any more story ideas, you know where to come. I don't charge.
Hey, you gave me the you asked me about the Stamkos Kucherov stats. So I looked that up for you, and I'm going to put that in the game notes.
My goodness.
I've been using that. Yeah, you've got all kinds of good info for me. Just keep laying it on me.
Now, listen, if I can just get my wife to listen to me, I think we'd be set.
You and me both.
That's right. Bernsie, good stuff, buddy, as always. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right, there he goes. That's Brian Burns, beat reporter for the Tampa Bay Lightning. A lot of good information today, Mish, with the schedule being released and getting an idea of the units and the line combinations and the defense pairings for the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's really getting started now for game one on Sunday.
Yeah, and as we get into the series, we'll see if these line combinations are fluid or if John Cooper kind of was able to wave his magic wand here and come up with the combinations and the pairings that are going to serve the Lightning as well as they possibly can. In other words, if they have success in the series, I think that we're not going to see a lot of changes. If things are not going well, that's what coaches do. They start mixing things up and looking for different combinations. So, knock on wood, let's hope that as we get into this series, these combinations are going to be pretty stable, because that means things have gone well for the Lightning at the start of the series.
Couldn't agree more. We'll do it again tomorrow, partner.
Talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Thanks to Steve Ersnick as well. Thanks to Brian Burns, who you just heard there. And thanks to you for listening. We always appreciate it. Keep those questions rolling in at Bolts Radio. Power Lunch again tomorrow, noon to 1 on Lightning Power Play.